and welcome to another edition of the Daggers and Lids podcast. I'm Charles Dagnall alongside Lydia Greenway. It has been a little while, dear listener and dear viewer. We understand that we have not been on air. We have not put out a podcast either on video or audio for quite some time. We're remedying that now. We are back, I think, in as full of manner as we possibly can be. There is a hugely good reason as to why we've not let this out. We've not said anything about why we've been off and why we've had that break, but there is a fantastically good reason. And Lydia Greenway, I shall let you explain what that reason is for our absence.
Thank you, Dagan. Well, first of all, it's great to see your face.
Great to see you.
I've been under the radar massively, but yeah, as you say, a good reason, as people knew at the last episode, I was pregnant, but I actually gave birth 3 weeks early. So the 20th of January, we had our little one, Mabel, arrive, which was a surprise, but it was amazing. And we are just finding our feet. So she's 4 weeks old now. And you can probably tell by a few bags under my eyes that the sleep deprivation is taking its toll. But yeah, that is why we've been off the radar. Obviously, we've been in touch quite a bit. And yeah, we're just settling into life. But I tell you the one thing that was good, because of the time difference, the Ashes was amazing because the test match started at 3:30 in the morning. So I was on the night shift watching the cricket, which was amazing. So yeah, it's worked out well.
Well, look, I speak for everybody who I don't know. It sounds weird saying I'm proud. That's wrong. But I kind of am in that Uncle Daggers is dying for a squeeze of Mabel.
I know, yeah.
Dying to meet her. So pleased for you guys. And just huge congratulations all around. And I'm sure I speak for everybody who listens, who watches. And it is a completely understandable reason. I think that's a pretty good reason. If there's a reason not to do a podcast, yeah, giving birth is probably right up there.
Yeah.
A little bit inconsiderate of Mabel to come at the time she did, you know, when we've got Ashes to talk about and when we've got a lot of things going on. So maybe that's something you might want to bring up with her when she's
a little bit
older, just if you wouldn't mind. But remember, her birthday will probably come in and around Ashes times as well.
That.
So it's just something just to keep in mind. But it is brilliant news, and you look sensational. Whatever you think about yourself, you look fantastic. My only advice to you as a father of a daughter is don't let them grow up.
Yes.
Because Beatrix is 15, and basically I'm an ATM. That's what I am, at an ATM, and when you want to
walking
come and see them, B, come round and see us, and then she's stuck in the room for the rest of the day, and you don't get to see them. So enjoy all of this. It is great news, and everyone, I'm sure, will agree with me that it is huge congratulations all round. Right.
Thanks, Daggers.
Let's get on to it. The things that we have missed, of course. Now, we debated this a little bit, and we have, being away and not being on, we have not actually reacted to anything that happened regarding the England women's team over in Australia. Now, what we're not going to do, we're not going to necessarily go talk about what happened on the field. That's too far gone. And we all know what occurred. An absolute drubbing. A drubbing of the highest order. 16 points to nil in the multi-format series. 3-0 in the T20. 3-0 in the one-day internationals, and a real battering in the test match as well. Just a word on that from you, Lydia, before we go on to the reaction to absolutely everything, because I think that's where the kind of story lies. Where do they go from here? On the field, the two sides, it seemed to me, couldn't have been further apart. Is that where you saw, or how you saw it?
Yeah, definitely, 100%. And I think there was, I think for all England fans, I think probably after the first couple of games, people would have still had a bit of hope, I think. You know, there was a lot of talk about how England came back in the last Ashes series. They've been here before. They can pull it back again. And that was probably the one bit of hope that any England fan was holding on to. But I think the reality was the nature of those first couple of games and how they were lost, I think, told otherwise. And then it just spiralled, obviously. There was a lot of talk about the scheduling and how thick and fast the games were coming, but that is the same for both teams. And unfortunately for England, they just couldn't switch it round into their favour and get any sort of momentum back. And that is largely because, as you've already said, the gulf between these two sides now is massive. Yes, Australia are brilliant and we should always give them credit. But at the same time, I think England have so many tools and players that should allow them to play better than they did. And I think that for everyone is probably the most disappointing thing. And I know we'll pick out the reasoning for it and how things have been let slip as we go further into it. But I think you'd probably agree with that. I think, Daggers, would that be fair?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think I said prior on this podcast, I said prior that England could feel optimistic. Right. Optimistic, yeah. Given what happened in the previous Ashes series and over in this country. I'm in India at the moment, by the way, everybody.
Yes.
So I will show you if you're watching on video. There is downtown Vadodara that I'm staying at the moment for the WPL. On to that later. Sorry, everybody.
Yeah.
But I said England had a reason to feel optimistic. The chances was always going to be slim because Australia at home are so dominant, they are so powerful. But you are looking at one of the two sides in England and India who could not challenge them, but test them a little bit and it not make it not necessarily as easy as maybe another international side going over to Australia. They weren't tested. They weren't tested. It was so dominant. And England were just genuinely never in with a shout. There was one one-day international, I think, and I'm thinking off the top of my head here, where Australia were bowled out for 180. And there was an opportunity for England to come back there. But again, it was that mentality. And there's so much, which we will come on to. There was so much lacking from England that even when Australia were bowled out for 180 in that one-day international, I was like, you know, this is going to take a lot. And it is, there are so many facets to why Australia were as dominant as they were. And it's worrying. It is worrying, not just for England, but for all international sides, I think. You know, Australia didn't qualify for the final of the World T20, they have these little moments where they reset a little bit and they want to stamp their authority on cricket again, and that is exactly what they did with England. And I'm afraid, as tough as it is, I thought maybe they might be able to nick one match or one T20 perhaps, but no chance. Absolutely no chance. And that scoreline, you know, 16-0, England were lucky to get nil at the end of the day. And so that's how we saw it on the field. Let's get to the reaction and where England go from here, because we will sort of go back a little bit to what we saw on the field. But one thing that did happen afterwards was that Claire Connor, the head of women's cricket, spoke to the media after the reaction, soon after the end of the test match. Now, I've got the audio and the video here. We'll hear from Claire Connor on a variety of different topics. We shall react to that in due course. So, very simply, the first question that she was asked was, where does the responsibility lie?
With any team sport defeat, you know, or success, responsibility for that and accountability lies with lots of us. It's not just the captain and the head coach. It's several people who are all in leadership positions making decisions. I'm not going to talk about, you know, any individuals specifically on this call. I hope you respect that. It's not the time or place. But you know what I will say is that we will have very honest and we won't conversations, and we won't shy away from difficult and honest conversations about how to take the team forward, because that's our jobs. You know, for several of us, that is our jobs. We need to, one of my reflections is that what we need to learn and act quickly.
So that's what Claire Connor had to say about where the responsibility lies. Where does it lie?
It's a good question, isn't it? I think it's I feel like it's a bigger issue than just what's happening at England level. I think there's probably at the moment a bit of a disconnect between what's happening internationally with the England women's cricket team and what's happening domestically. That I don't think is quite right at the moment. So that could come down to, okay, well, why is there a disconnect? And maybe that's because of the people involved at England level at the moment don't maybe necessarily view the domestic structure as a vehicle to help allow their players to get better. And if that's the case, then you look at everyone involved in that bigger level, which Claire Connor has alluded to. I think the one thing that they do need to do is make sure that any review is done by an external, whether it's an external
Yes.
company, an external individual. I think in this situation, you can't be marking your own homework,
No.
because you need someone else to come in with a fresh pair of eyes who haven't necessarily been swayed one way or the other by individuals or existing relationships. And you have to have that external person come in because they will then, they should be able to pinpoint where that responsibility lies. I think it's quite a hard question to answer directly by just saying one individual or two. I think it's actually a whole host of things that need to be looked at.
I
What would you
agree.
say?
I agree, and I think the fact that someone external, if they are going to have reviews, and we'll come on to that in a minute, but it has to be from outside. It can't be from within. But where does the responsibility lie? I'm sorry, but it lies with Claire Connor, because you are the head of England women's cricket. It will be the same if in the men, you know, you're looking at questions are going to be asked about England men at this moment in time, and where does the responsibility lie? It lies with Rob Key. It lies with Brendan McCullum, and it lies with the England captain of both white and red ball cricket. Similarly, in the women's game, ultimately, if you are the head of England women's cricket, the captain and the coach, they are the four that have got to look at what has gone wrong, look at why it has gone wrong, and it takes somebody from the outside to actually sort of go through these with a fine-tooth comb. But when you are the head, you know, we don't hear from Connie too much. She's been the head of women's cricket for England for what, last decade or so, something like this. And we are getting to a tipping point now, I feel, where, you know, the women's game has been professional for quite a period of time now. The standards that are being set, it's not as though this, you know, you're not seeing what Australia are doing and how they are progressing and the standard that you know you've got to reach to get to where you want to be. So I think, you know, they've got to take a long, hard look at themselves, and formulate a plan. You know, someone's got to come in and say, this is what's got to happen. But, you know, I think they should be looking over their shoulder, because a lot of what has happened, and given the amount of money that's been spent and the investment in the game and the kind of money that these England players are on as well, I think there are certain elements that they have got to. I think that's where ultimately the leadership group of Claire Connor, Jonathan Finch, John Lewis and Heather Knight, I think they have to take some kind of collective responsibility.
Yeah,
Let's
that's fair
move
enough.
on. Let's move on. The next question that she was put to was about there was an interesting press conference that was had with John Lewis, the England head coach. And a lot of this The Ashes was talking about the state of the fitness between the two sides, the fitness, the agility, the power, and all of that sort of stuff. And John Lewis came out with a quote, and it was about the fact that Australia have better weather and they have better conditions for young people to get out. And look, he's right. They do have better weather, and they do. But is that the reason why one side is fitter than the other? Let's hear what Claire Connor had to say in response to that quote.
Look, I think John was talking about the overall athleticism of the Australian women's cricket team in what he was saying, with that sort of anecdote. And I think that is, that is an area that he honed in on because it's been very evident that the Australia women's cricket team are setting new standards of athleticism in our sport. And that's obviously one area where we have been outshone. And you know, one thing I, you know, when I, one thing I think will be true is that our players will have to look at that level of athleticism and speed and power and feel, you know, the athleticism that is evident in their fielding, and see that as a new benchmark. And that's what happens in sport. We know that you have to we have to respond to that, and we have to respond quickly. As has been much talked about, you know, fitness has lots of different components. But if we look at if we want to go past Australia, then it's clearly an area, along with many others. You know, playing spin, for example. I don't want to place too much emphasis on fitness or athleticism or whatever we want to call it. But there is no doubt that it's a key area for us to go away and recognise honestly where we are, and look at where we can gain improvements. But it's not the only area.
So that's what Claire Connor said in response to the quote from John Lewis. I'm going to kick off here now, Lids, because I feel
Go
like I'm getting on my long run. And I might as well do it early. Might as well.
on.
Why do you not know? Why do you not know what the fitness levels are? And Australia are setting new standards for fitness levels? Come on. Come on. There is a there should be a minimum standard of fitness. You know, I'm going to break it down in its simplest terms. The England central contract is what, £130,000 a year, something in that region, plus all the match fees and all of that. That's £200,000 a year, right? For me, there is a minimum benchmark of professionalism and all of those aspects. To be a professional cricketer, you have to hit minimum fitness standards. Now, I'm sorry, but you could see the difference between Australia and England. We all have eyes. The way they move to the ball, the way they run, the way, you know, their
The
athletic
dives.
features, their dives, all of these things. And I'm sorry, the difference was stark. Now, I don't know what fitness testing England do, but I'm looking on as a former pro. You know, I was a bang average former pro, and I got fitness tested four times a year, pre-season, middle of the season, end of the season, and once around Christmas time. You get fitness tested. That was bleep tests, that was long run tested, yo-yo tests, all of these sort of things. And to me, I don't know what fitness tests do. They do fitness tests if you're an England cricketer, because it doesn't seem to me. I'm happy to be put right. I'm more than happy to be put right. I don't know what they do, but they are not, and this is not a new thing. I don't agree with Claire Connor saying they're setting new standards in fitness. No, they're just bloody fit. They are fit and athletic, and you can see it in the field. And with that, sorry, Led, last bit. They talk about, you know, on the field, fitness doesn't just incorporate physical fitness. What happens is, if you are physically fit, you're mentally switched on as well. It allows you that time for longer concentrations, more, you know, when you're coming back for a second or a third spell, you're in better shape to do that. There are so many aspects which, not just physically fit, but it also, your concentration levels are better. Your fielding will no doubt improve because of your speed to the ball. You're, you know, not as knackered in hot and steamy conditions, etc., etc. And this is one thing that I don't agree with, that these aren't new fitness levels. They're just bloody fit, and that is the standard. How do you not know that that is the standard that needs to be hit in the women's game now?
Well, that sort of leads me on to my take on it slightly, is John Lewis has come from the men's game, and we see this a lot. We see head coaches get appointed in the women's game who have not had a huge amount of exposure to the women's game, but they come in and they get quite a prominent role within the women's game. And they're sort of learning on the job. So that quote in itself from John Lewis has sort of said, we were taken by surprise as to how fit or athletic Australia are. And you're completely right. Australia have always been fit and
Right.
athletic. When I played them, though, you had Rachel Haynes, you had Avix Blackwell, Lisa Salaker, many other players, Shelley Nitschke, who's the current head coach. So if you're embedded in the women's game, you know the standards that Australia set. It shouldn't take you to come into a role to work it out. You should have already known that. So that's always been one of my slight grumbles around appointments that we see within the women's game, is that we just automatically think, because they've come from the men's game and it's perhaps perceived as a better setup, a better standard, that we automatically think they're going to come in and know from ball one what they need to do. Now, not singling out John Lewis, it just so happens that that is the situation,
Yeah.
and he's come into that situation, and but it happens so much, and I think we need to have a look at other coaches who are in the game day in, day out, and have been there day in, day out for many, many years, because we shouldn't have coaches who are learning on the job about the women's game. That's one of the reasons why he's gone out to the WPL, so we've been told, so that he can look at other women players in the game. Well, you should already know the women's players in the women's game.
Yeah.
And yeah, so that's my take on it, which is slightly different from yours, but I do agree with yours as well.
I just have this thing that, and it stems from when I was a pro, and maybe it's a little bit of an old school theory. And if it is, I apologize, but I never wanted to be dropped because of a fitness. I wanted to make sure that that was never a reason. The reason that I wanted to be that if I was dropped, it's because I was no good. That is a completely that was a completely legitimate reason, and I was dropped many times for being no good. But it was never because you weren't fit enough, and that should be, in my opinion, for any professional athlete, for any professional sportsman or woman, that you have to hit fit. You've got to hit fitness standards. You have got to be fit enough to play the game, and it's just something that is. It's just a given. It's just a given being a professional, and and I am more than happy. And let me say this now: I am more than happy to be put right. If you are doing X, if you are absolutely killing the bleep test, or if you're doing the 2K run in 8 minutes or whatever it is, then fine. I'll put my hand up and say you're fit enough. I apologize, but I don't see it. I've been in the game long enough, and you have as well. I just don't see it. Anyway. Let's continue. Let's move on. Because one of the sort of lower points of the Ashes series was an incident that took place, I think, after one of the days of the Test matches. Now, this was an incident which didn't show England in its best light. Alex Hartley was out there doing media for the BBC and for Channel 7. And she put out on social media that after one of the days, Sophie Eccleston refused to do an interview with her. Now, this is possibly in response, she said, to some of the things that were said about fitness levels after the World T20 in Dubai. And then it all kind of blew up a little bit. This is what Claire Connor had to say in response to Eccleston's refusal to do the interview.
An unfortunate incident that won't happen again. Our players, in general, I would say, and I hope everybody on this call would concur, they embrace their media obligations. It matters to them to be good role models for women's cricket and the England women's cricket team. And as you know, as professional women's cricket has developed at the rate that it has over recent years, that scrutiny is something that we will all have to embrace, and accept. And actually, you know, that it lots of athletes around the world would be desperate for that level of engagement with media and with fans. And we're accountable to respond to that and to make sure that we do engage in the right way.
Following on from what she responded to that particular incident, there was questions asked about complacency, an attitude of complacency within the England side.
I understand why somebody watching this series would come to that conclusion, because the scoreline has been so brutal. I don't recognize that. I don't recognize some of the narrative around players being too comfortable. I think this group of players work extremely hard. A lot of that goes unseen. And there is a culture of improvement, a culture of wanting to be the best. And I don't recognize I don't recognize a view that anybody in our England women's environment is settling for anything other than constant improvement and trying to be the best.
So, Claire Connor, both on the Sophie Eccleston refusal for the interview and also about complacency within the England camp, she was a little sort of stuttery on that second question about complacency. The problem is, Lydia, is that this is the way that the England women's team are perceived. And not only are performances bad on the field, but when instances happen off the field, there was also an instance that was caught on television, Heather Knight not shaking the umpire's hand after the rain-affected T20, where she batted so beautifully. And I understand it, she was raw and she was frustrated. She thought that England could possibly get a victory in that one, and I get that, but it was absolutely chucking it down. You couldn't stay on the field, and that's just the way it goes. But you can understand, I suppose, why the viewing public could come to those conclusions, and the media as well.
Yeah, and I think we've spoken about this before. I think if it's just the odd person saying it, as a team, as a group, you can say, oh, that's being said over there, but we know what's happening really internally. Let's keep our focus, let's keep moving forwards. But I think when suddenly a lot of people are saying the same things, I think that's when you have to say, okay, hang on. Are we carrying ourselves in the right way? Are we interacting in the right way with people outside of our group? Because there have just been a few too many instances now where they have come out unfavourably. And Sophie Eccleston is one of them. Heather Knight not shaking the umpire's hand is another. And I think that can be a reflection on the culture in that you are setting. And it's quite hard to see when you're in it, actually, that things have changed for the worse. And I do see it a bit. I see standards have lowered. I see a bit more less accountability now from the group. I think the messaging at times during the Ashes was poor. I think if you could compare direct interviews between Elise Perry and an England player, there is a huge amount of accountability from Australia. They put their hands up when they're not right, wrong. So when they haven't been playing well, they say, we need to get better in these areas. I didn't see that from England. I heard a lot of, we're not far off when they were a long way off. So I am concerned, I have to admit. I don't think their focus is as laser sharp as it could be. And I think a big reason for that is because they have had brilliant series wins leading up to big events, and I think that has led them into a false sense of security as to where they are as a side, and therefore that has, whether it's meant that the standards have slipped somehow, standards have slipped and they haven't been doing the right things at the right times on and off the pitch. So that for me is a concern at the moment for this England team.
I think I totally agree with you. And there is, again, a variety of aspects to this. One thing they've got to be very careful of is that they, over the last sort of decade or so, have built up a great following, especially back in England. The amount of people that come to watch them, the amount of people who have seen what kind of ambassadors they are and have been, and they really have. They really have been role models and grown the game fantastically well. You can lose that very quickly. You can lose that goodwill very quickly with just a couple of incidents like that, and the minds can change, and you've got to be very, very careful. The messaging that you talk about, oh, it frustrates me. Frustrating. We want to be brave. We want to play with freedom and expression, and we want to do that. Well, don't just say that. Do it. Win games. I don't care how you win games. Win games, right? If it's ugly wins, fine, but you're winning. Not this strange messaging that comes out. It's utter, utter garbage, right? I can't be doing with it. Like I say, this air of responsibility, of ownership, you know, we weren't good enough, we're not good enough, we need to be better, and we're going to work our absolute tails off to do that. I don't see that either, and there's a variety of different things. Yes, they've had good series wins, but Lids, we've been saying for the last year and a half, watch out, be careful, because 90% of the cricket that England play, they're going to win. Right, because the sides aren't technically as good, they don't have the resources, they don't have the infrastructures like England do. So if you go up against Pakistan and New Zealand and South Africa, who were weakened in that South Africa series, you're going to probably win just through being slightly better than them, right? But the amount of drop catches hasn't changed.
Just
dropping
lost
catches
you.
And laughing about it on the field and stuff like that, sort of general... we've talked about the sort of general fitness of the England team already. And it goes back to me as well, sort of saying, well, it's all very well doing this, but how many games of domestic cricket are you playing? Actually, how serious are you about this? Because I don't see many of the England players playing that much domestic cricket. I don't see that sort of will and want to get better. I will give you an example. Georgia Vohl comes in to the Australian side. She actually made her debut against India. She's made a century in her second one-day international. This is a player who's 21 years old and has scored six centuries in domestic cricket, right? How many centuries has Alice Capsey scored? How many centuries? Sophia Dunkley scored two, right? She went back, and she's a great example, someone going back to domestic cricket, changing her game, changing her technique, working hard and coming back, right? And that we can all see. But how many centuries has Maya Bouchier scored in domestic cricket? She scored her first century since she was, what, nine or whatever it was, last summer. And you know, that to me is indicative of actually being complacent. I think that is. I think you've got to go out, learn how to score, and want to go out and learn how to score centuries and take fivers. Lauren Bell, she has come on. She's been a huge, you know, she's been really, really good in the Ashes series. I thought she had an excellent series. But no way should Lauren Bell be changing technique in international cricket. But we said this last year. It should be happening in domestic cricket. And if you're worried about the standard of domestic cricket, the standard will rise if your England players are playing. So I'm not saying you've got to have a look at workload, but come on.
Yeah.
There is workload and there's workload. And for me, I just think that air of complacency is highlighted when there are instances off the field and the standard on it as well.
I mean, the point you raise about domestic cricket not being good enough for these England players, it absolutely is, because if they're playing in our domestic competitions and they are going out scoring 100 every game, taking fifers, you could say, okay, maybe, you know, we need to look at how we can make our domestic structure more competitive. But that's not happening. And I think what England need to do now is say to their England players, go and play in our domestic competitions. That will bring the standard up, dominate in our domestic competition, and that will improve their own game as well. Our domestic structure is ripe and ready to be used, and my concern is we're not using it the way that we should do, and we're not using it the way that the Australians are, which is they create rivalries, there's huge competitiveness, there's pressured moments, which we know is a big gap that England need to do better in. And I just think we're underestimating the role of our domestic game at the moment. Just to finish off that point, Daggers, and pick up on what you said there.
Okay, we'll hear one more clip from Claire Connor. And this was about some of the issues about not being able to perform under pressure, or fielding being not new issues, something we've just spoken about. Could they have been addressed earlier before such a dramatic defeat?
I think one of the reflections, immediate reflections, and I'm sure it'll evolve over the coming weeks, is the sort of scarcity of time when our players are under pressure. I'm sure you know what I mean by that. So when, you know, the run into this Ashes, or the run into the T20 World Cup last October, November, We'd dominated all of the cricket we'd played in for almost 18 months. Within that were two series wins against white ball series wins against Australia in the Home Ashes in 2023, where we got onto a run of confidence and performance and skill that exposed Australia under pressure and showed that some of their vulnerability when you can get into them. So my reflections would be that we dominated, and we didn't dominate that Ashes, but we won. Let's say we won a huge amount of bilateral series going into that T20 World Cup. And then, as people saw, we had a bad 20 to 30 minutes under pressure in the field and didn't qualify for the semi-finals. We had a very, very strong tour of South Africa after that in November, December, playing in the same multi-format as we've just been in over here, the same Ashes sort of replicated multi-format. And you could argue we weren't under pressure in that series, and then we've come out here 2 weeks later, and from ball one, we've been under pressure. So we have got some real thinking and work to do about pressure, because our players in their lives, and this isn't in their sporting careers so far, some of them haven't been under much pressure. And we've got to work out how to perhaps create more of that artificially, or through different scenarios, and certainly for our younger players coming through. And I do think the new professional domestic structure will generate some of that, and opportunities for England A, for example, over here will generate some of that. But it's a great question, and we've got to, it's an area for me that is absolutely paramount in how we move forward, is playing under pressure when a lot of the cricket that we play doesn't create the pressure that we experience at a World Cup or in an Ashes series. You can only play in the cricket that you're in at the time, can't you? So you know, when we're in a bilateral series, I'm not going to be arrogant enough to name another team that I would expect us to dominate. But if we're in a bilateral series where we expect to dominate, then we talk a lot about ruthlessness and dominating, and you know, winning in the strongest possible way. So, you know, what we will look to, one of the things we're already talking about, is how we will, you know, use our series this summer to expose players perhaps slightly earlier than you would ex you know, without this defeat, than possibly we would have done, because we've got to put different players under different match scenarios on the biggest stages. You know, we're already hearing that lots of our grounds have sold 10, 15,000 tickets for the games against India back home this summer. Our players have, you know, our players, we have got to expose our players to that kind of pressure, and we've got to find other ways to do so.
So that was Claire Connor answering that question. What was your thoughts?
I think it's a lot simpler than perhaps is being made out. I think make the most of the domestic structure. When you look at the fixtures this year, there is a massive block. At the start of the season, there is the Metrobank 50 over competition where there is no other cricket. And then at the end, which is perfect timing for India at the World Cup, there is another block. Our domestic structure is good enough, but our England players have to be playing in it. And you and I have both said this. We've said this for a couple of years now. And in a way, the reason for the England players not to have made the most of a domestic structure is sort of saying that they're too good for it. And now I think they're recognising actually, yes, they're exciting and they've got talent, but from a cricketing point of view, they've not got the robustness, the grittiness, the determination that you need to perform under pressure. And our domestic structure, you don't have to look too much further than saying, right, girls, we're going to get you playing as much domestic cricket as possible, and that would expose you to high pressured situations. You're nodding, daggers. Is that what you were going to say as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I, you can take 100 high catches in practice. It's not the same as taking a high catch in a match situation. You know, I'm you look at match awareness as well. There's certain bits of match awareness that only comes from playing a lot of cricket. And you know, and I'm sorry to Amy Jones for this, and I apologize, it's just come up the top of my head. For argument's sake, you've got to know that you don't leave Lauren Bell stranded at the start of a new over when you need 20 to win, and you're the one that's 40 odd not out, and you're the only chance of winning the game. You've got to know, you've got to be counting balls, you've got to be working out how you make sure that you are on strike facing the majority of those balls for the best chance to win. Now, I apologize to Amy because she's a fabulous cricketer, and you know, but that awareness comes from playing matches and being in those situations. No amount of practice in the world can replicate what you get in matches, okay? If the domestic structure isn't necessarily strong, then England players should, if that's what they're thinking, and I don't know if it is, but if that's what they're thinking, then you should be coming into domestic cricket and smashing big hundreds and taking fifers, right? And dominating in that domestic game. There is nothing that replicates playing in competitive matches. As much practice as you want to do, it is, you know, you drop one, there's nothing on it. There's nothing on it. It doesn't mean anything. But if you drop one in a match, it does. And I am with you wholeheartedly. And don't give me this exposure thing. Half of the England players are out here playing WPL. They've played in WPL before. They've played in Women's Big Bash League. They've played in high pressure situations. I don't buy it. I don't buy that. You know, we've got to try and recreate pressure thing. No, you recreate pressure and match awareness and skills by playing in them. I want to see England players going to domestic cricket and dominating. And if they don't dominate in England, in domestic cricket, well, that just shows you that maybe they're not as good as you think they are, potentially.
And
So,
it brings that brings sorry to interrupt, Douglas, that brings in jeopardy as well. So that brings in the looking over the shoulder, which Australia have in abundance. There is no Australian player who thinks they're going to be picked every single game. So you want that jeopardy of thinking, okay, if I don't perform domestically here, I'm going to be dropped or I'm going to be sidelined for a series. We need that competitiveness. Sorry, I just interrupted you there, but
No,
I just thought that's
you are
relevant.
more than welcome to, and it's good that you do. For me, the final point from me is that, you know, I would make a structure where I want to see fitness reports. I want to see players hitting certain levels of fitness. If you don't hit those levels of fitness, I'm sorry, you don't play. South Africa did it. They did it with Lazelle Lee. They did it with Danai van Niekerk. They've made two World T20 finals since. It's not seemed to hurt them that much. And so if you know, and I want that filtered from the top level and from the England level down to the domestic level as well. I want to see England players playing more domestic cricket. I think they should. I think they need more cricket. And I think that if you are going to be an England player, you dominate in those. And this ruthlessness, going back, you know, to high pressure environments and being ruthless. England struggled in the first T20s against Pakistan in the summer of last year. Do you know why? None of them had played any cricket for 2 months. They'd not played any cricket. The last cricket they played was probably over in New Zealand, and before that, the WPL. That's 2 months of cricket you've not played. A lot of them hadn't had any cricket prior to that. And so you should be turning up against a side like Pakistan, no disrespect to them, but England should be battering them, right? Every single game they play, because I tell you what, Australia would. Australia would. So that's. I think there's lots to be reviewed. I think there's some hard questions to be asked and some decisions, genuine decisions to be made. And it is up to men, up to players, up to staff, up to coaches and those at the top of the ECB to actually get England to where they need to be, because for me, they are a mile off at the moment.
I mean, interesting. I don't know if you saw, but Charlotte Edwards did an interview recently for the ECB, and she said that she's just wants to help them. And I think if you're anyone at the ECB and you've just heard those words come out of her mouth, get on the phone and call her, because she is embedded in the game. Everyone knows that. She has to be someone who they look to chat to. And I completely agree. Turn to the people who are seeing what's happening and just get their opinion. That is okay to ask people's opinions. As I say, you can't mark your own homework, in this situation, I don't think.
Absolutely right. But we shall wait and see how this all transpires. I'm sure meetings are taking place. I'm not aware of any, but and reviews are taking place, and we shall see what the upshot of it is. But we've had our say, we've said our piece, we move on. We look forward to a successful English summer. When the summer comes around, at the moment there's plenty of cricket that's going on. Prior to that, of course, and it sort of stems where I am at the moment,
I
here in
know.
Vadodara.
I know. Tell us about it, Daggers. Obviously, well, we need to touch on the Under-19 World Cup, but because
Yes, we
you've
do.
mentioned the WPL, let's just talk about that, because we're into the swing of things now, aren't we?
Yes.
The games are underway. A couple of teams have had two games. Other teams have just had one. As things stand, RCB are top of the table. They're two from two. They're
RCB are
looking
top of
pretty
the table.
strong.
Yep.
Gujarat Titans, they're second. They've won one, lost one, as have Delhi Capitals. And then Mumbai Indians and UP Warriors have only had one game each, and they've lost their first game. So tell us, Daggers, how's it all going
well,
out
you've
there?
Well, you've been part of the WPL for the first couple of years, and you've got a really poor excuse, I think, for not being here for the third
I've
edition.
I've got FOMO, I have to admit.
Absolutely. But we will just say that your child I'll say it's a reasonable excuse. Look, and I know this is a brilliant competition. It really is. And they do it properly out here in India. And it's great. What I think is great is that they've sort of built it slowly over the first 3 years. So over the first 2 years, especially, where they were in Mumbai for the entirety of the competition. Last year went to Bangalore at the Chinnaswamy and then to the Arun Jaitley Stadium in Delhi. So 2 weeks in Bangalore, 2 weeks or Bengaluru, and 2 weeks in Delhi. And now they're starting to take it out a little bit further, and some of the other home teams have got an opportunity to play in front of their fans. So the Gujarat Giants here, this is where we are in Vadodara, which is about 2 hours south of Ahmedabad. And they've got this swanky brand new stadium, 40,000 seat stadium, the Baroda Cricket Association Stadium. It's brilliant. What a fabulous venue it is. The roads around it need a bit of work, got to be honest. It gets a little bit jam-packed when coming out of the stadium, one or two. But that will come, I'm sure, because the stadium itself is sensational. They big it up. They advertise it fantastically. They market it wonderfully well. They're big stars. They want to perform. Of course, in the big Indian stars I'm talking about, as well as overseas stars, but I think the tournament has so much more going for it when the Indian stars perform. We have had that already, which gets people talking. We've had a superb wicket first that in the Gujarat Giants RCB game, where Gujarat Giants go and get 200 and Ash Gardner goes and smashes eight sixes in it, and you're just like, this is what you want. And then RCB were struggling, and then Rishi Ghosh smashes 70-odd to win the game, and they knock off 200. And immediately you're starting with a bang. 400 runs scored, crowd going nuts. And the crowd was a reasonable one, probably sort of 10 to 12,000, something like that, for the first game, which it looked good. You know, the whole of the bottom level was pretty much packed, the second level, and there's a third tier as well. Then you get a last ball thriller between the Mumbai Indians and the Delhi Capitals, and there were some umpiring decisions that were a little bit questionable, and we're getting mixed messages as to what is run out. Is it when the LED bales light up, or is it when the bale is dislodged and the playing conditions didn't necessarily match what the actual laws were that were coming in the following day? So that's all got ironed out now, and it's when the umpire actually sees the bale dislodged now. But that gets people talking. Those sort of incidents get people talking about the competition, and especially when it's Delhi Capitals versus the Mumbai Indians. Great to see Nat Siverbrunt getting runs in her first game. There is a due factor out here. It is more advantageous for sides batting second. That can't be helped. But it's not as though in the first two games there were not opportunities for the side batting first to win it. Had Gujarat Giants held on to their catches, they would have won that game. Rishi Ghosh was dropped first ball. She goes on and smashes 70-odd. Then in the second game, it really could have been on the it wasn't on the toss of a coin. Anything. So many different incidents happened in that game. It could have been either of the sides batting first or second, winning it. A fairly routine win for Gujarat Giants in the third game against the UP Warriors. They look a bit light on batting to the UP Warriors. I think it could
There's
be a
no
bit of a
Alyssa Healy, is there, this year?
no Alyssa
She's,
Healy this year. They've gone out and got Alana King, who struggled in her first game. Sophie Eccleston bowled very, very well, but too few runs to try and defend, and I think that could be the issue for the UP Warriors. But fabulous for the Gujarat Giants to go and get a victory in front of their own fans. The crowd started slowly building, building. And then to last night, where RCB absolutely demolished the Delhi Capitals, Smriti Mandhana getting 80, and the crowd, 20,000 people, were there to witness it and to see Smriti smash it around, even though I forgot her name at the toss. Oh my God, how embarrassing. It happens this way, and let me tell you, dear viewer and listener, that you never want it to happen to you. Now and again, and it is very infrequent, and it happens to the best of us. I just blanked. I just completely blanked. And I saw her there. I know who she is. I've only interviewed her 6,500 times, and I know she's the most popular player in India, and it just didn't come to me. So as stupid as I felt, in that toss, I can assure you it won't happen again. But maybe that was her inspiration. I'll tell you who I am, Dagnall. I'll tell you who I am. I'm going to go and smash the ball and you won't forget again.
That's a horrible feeling, though, Daggers.
Oh,
I've been
just
there
the
as
worst.
well.
And I'm sure it was only a couple of seconds, but it felt like a lifetime, let me tell you.
Yeah, it does.
But overall, the competition has started with a bang. People are talking. Now, look, I know the Champions Trophy is starting very, very soon, but I honestly think that the focus will remain high for the WPL. We move to Bangalore in a couple of days' time, or Bengaluru. We've got a couple more games this evening. We have the Gujarat Giants playing on Thursday. Third home game against the Mumbai Indians, and I like that. You know, we're in Gujarat now. They get three home games. When we move to the Chinnaswamy, Bengaluru will get their home games, and subsequently up to Lucknow, and of course the finals taking place in Mumbai. So they're building it slowly and slowly throughout the years. The interest levels are going through the roof. They really are. I don't think it'll be too long before they add another team. Maybe not next year, but maybe the year after, something like that. We'll have a look. But it is a great competition. How's it look from back where you are?
I've enjoyed watching it. It's a really good time, actually, here in the UK. I think the games start at 2 p.m. So I just plop myself on the sofa and can watch games of cricket every day, which is great. But yeah, the crowds have come across really well. As you say, the stadiums do look full, and I think that's often because the enthusiasm from the Indian fans is so much more, well, it's just more, isn't it, compared to any other fan around the world. So that always promotes a sense of atmosphere. Cricket-wise, I think the games have been great. That Mumbai Indians and the DC game, even though the Mumbai Indians came out on the wrong side of it, it was just a really good game of cricket. And that's what you want from any competition, is close games of cricket. How often do we criticise men's competitions around the world where they just haven't been close games, and straight into the thick of the WPL, we're getting those sorts of games. So I think it'll be a really close tournament this year, actually. I think other teams will start to challenge more. So, I'm looking forward to it. It's Mumbai Indians again today, isn't it? I think they're up against, is it GG? Are they playing Gujarat?
Yeah, it is the Gujarat Giants. So by the time this podcast goes out, the result will be known. But it's just exciting to see the stars come out and play. Ash Gardner starting the season the way that she has is just so great for the Gujarat Giants. I love seeing young players coming in.
Yes.
Nikki Prasad, who was in the under-19s captain, the Indian under-19 captain, put in a great performance for the Delhi Capitals in that first win against the Mumbai Indians. You want to see Nat Sivabrunt doing her thing. We've seen that. We've seen Smriti. We've seen Risha. And Harmanpreet actually making 40 odd off 20 balls. She looked in such good touch before she holed out. So it's the advent of new superstars coming to the fore from India that we, you know, Kanika Ahuja, who many people won't know, but her 30 off 13 balls the other day for RCB alongside Risha Ghosh were absolutely vital. So I'm pleased that Vijay Jasita is bowling for Bangalore. She's not had a great time of it, but there is a young bowler who I saw in the 19s who's like the carbon copy of Bhuvaneshwar Kumar. She's like cloned his action. And she's a talent. She's a real talent. And I think one day she'll go on to play for India. But you know, this is all a learning curve. I'd like to see Shabnam Shaquille play for Gujarat. I think she might even have a chance this evening. But these young, promising cricketers getting the exposure, learning on the job, if you like, in fantastic environments. It's a wonderful, wonderful competition. They do it so well. And we'll keep across it, I'm sure, throughout the course of this next month.
Yeah, absolutely. And well, we've obviously covered quite in depth there, the Ashes and the WPL, but you've already mentioned the young Indian talent. And the other place where you have been is out in Malaysia, covering the under-19 T20 World Cup. So I thought that's a nice place to finish, really. It's just your sort of overarching views on the teams that you saw on show there. Did teams do themselves justice? Obviously, England were out there. They just missed out. Well, they didn't just miss out. They lost to India in the semi-final. Yeah. They posted 113 for 8, and India chased that down pretty convincingly in 15 overs. The other semi-final was South Africa and Australia. South Africa chased down 105 in the 19th over. So that meant that it was a South Africa and India final. So, yeah, I think a nice place to finish, Daggers, just your experience out there, players that impressed you and countries as well that impressed you too.
Well, look, India winning is not a huge surprise to me. They won the first competition. They've won this competition because of the amount of depth that they've got. And people were saying they could have sent like 5 different teams to this under-19 competition. One thing I will tell you is that it rains a lot in Malaysia. And they had it sort of towards the back end of monsoon season. So I was in Johor, which is south of the country, and following the England fortunes and the progress there, first game was abandoned against Ireland, and then it sort of settled down a little bit and the group games could conclude. And then we went to Borneo, Sarawak, and it just, a rain I've never seen before. It was incredible.
Monsoon.
I mean, it was just bouncing off the pavements out there. How they got any cricket in, goodness only knows. Mm. England's first game against Nigeria was called off. Then South Africa played against Ireland. And I'm not going to lie to you, Lyd, the ground wasn't fit. It was just not fit. It was so, I mean, water was still coming up from the, you know, from the outfield. But I suppose, look, there's two ways of looking at it. If you don't play, you're never going to get any cricket in. But also, you don't want any injuries to occur or anything like that with someone slipping or twisting an ankle. So, look, it wasn't, from that perspective, great from south of the country. But in Kuala Lumpur, they got pretty much all of the cricket in, a few delayed games here and there. I thought England did pretty well. It's strange to say that an England under-19 team is less experienced than the one that they played 2 years ago. But it just felt like we knew, we were out there for that one in South Africa. We knew a lot of those players had had a little bit of taste of domestic cricket, and we knew a few more of them than I did in this this round of the tournament. There's a huge positive. Davina Parin looked, you know, fearless, and she went out and whacked it more often than not and looked at a cut above in the England ranks at the top of the order. And there was one or two I really liked. Charlotte Lambert, I thought she bowled, you know, nice heavy ball, swung the ball away, she could plonk it in the middle order. The one that really stuck out was Katie Jones behind the stumps. She had just electric hands, really, really good hands. And H.D. Ackerman, who was alongside my former captain at Leicestershire, who was on the commentary team, he wanted to write poetry about her wicketkeeping. Mm. It was that good, and a real difference maker she was. So lots of good things. I was a little frustrated come the semi-final against India, because it's almost as though the coaching staff, I'm not putting any blame on the coaching staff at all, because Chris Guest is the head coach and he's been involved in women's cricket for a long period of time. So I like that these youngsters have got a cricket coach who has been in and around the women's game for a long period of time. Beth Morgan was there as well. And John Stanworth, who I've known for donkey's years, who is Has been involved moulding young cricketers. So I really like that coaching setup for England. I think it's a really good environment for them to be in. But they kept getting out the same way, trying to slow sweep. And it's almost against India's left-arm spinners. And it was almost a case of, well, we've learnt this shot, so we better play it. And rather than, oh, we keep getting out to it. So a little disappointing after getting off to a good start in the semi-final. As for Australia, South Africa, both, I think you look at these under-19 competitions not necessarily as the strength of the teams, but of individuals who you spot and think, oh yeah, I like the look of you, and I like the look of you, and you've got something that is worth keeping an eye on. A couple of the Australian bowlers, the seam bowlers, look very good. Kiver Bray is a very very good looking player. And for South Africa, their captain, Kayla Rainacre, I think she is a real one to watch. Kadebo Meso, who's the wicketkeeper for South Africa, I think she should be keeping in the first team. I think she should be South Africa's keeper. I think she's got better hands. She's good with the bat. She's a menace behind the stumps. So I think there's lots of young players who you just go, yeah, like the look of you. And that's a really, really positive thing. The other aspect to this competition, which I know you'll agree with, is the fact it's 16 teams. And yes, the group stages at times can seem like a little bit, the gulf is enormous. But how important it is, how brilliant it is to see Samoa represented there, to see to see Malaysia have a team, and the United States. Tell you what, the United States have got some players. And in this WPL, where you're allowed associate players to play, Sarah Bryce is playing for the Delhi Capitals and putting on a good show as well, let me tell you. I'd like to see Disha Dhingra from the United States, Ritu Singh, Mahi Madhivan, and Paghia Diallo, the left-handed opener. She is a player. They've got some players. So what I would like to see is someone give them a little bit of money and say, come over and play. Get more cricket. United States under-19s, come and play against Warwickshire, against, have a 50-over game against Yorkshire or whatever it might be, just to advance them. I think it's a fabulous tournament played in a brilliant spirit. And come semi-finals time, that's when, the wheat and the chaff are separated, and it's individuals that you're looking at.
Well, yeah, as you say, it's you remember names, don't you, in these sorts of competitions. But as well, just as importantly, I know Sue Strachan, who was the manager at Scotland, she just said the fact that the competition's been opened up to this many teams has helped them so much, because then we saw a lot of their Scotland under 19 girls in the most recent World Cup playing for the senior team. So yeah, hopefully that will continue as well. I think what will continue as well, Dad, because as you're getting your air miles up, you've been doing
Yes, I've been dotting around left, right, and centre. I'm looking forward to it. And I will say that I was horribly ill during. I had 1 week at home between Malaysia and coming out to the WPL. And I never get sick. I never get sick. Can't remember the last time. And goodness me, something struck me down. I was flying back from Malaysia with three blankets over me, shaking feverishly.
That's horrible.
I don't know what the people sat next to me were thinking, but thinking, well, I wish I was sat somewhere else. And I didn't have chance to see, hardly got chance to see Beatrix. I hardly got chance to see Asher, my partner, because I was stuck in the spare room, just being as ill and as sick as a dog. So fear not, I'm back on form now. And no sympathy cards needed. Oh no. Or flowers sent, but no, it's great to come away and do these competitions. I'm obviously very fortunate, missing you hugely out here doing these things, because I know how involved you were with the Mumbai Indians. You have, of course, got better reasons for not being here, but it doesn't stop you. Doesn't stop me missing broadcasting with you. And we will keep across. We will get together again, hopefully before too long, when we get into the throes of the W. PL, maybe in the middle of it in a week's time in Bangalore, perhaps. But hopefully that has appeased everybody's sort of. For those of you who do subscribe to us, and which we are forever thankful for, we did have an opportunity to chat through the Ashes. This, even though it's a little bit late, hopefully you've enjoyed it. We will endeavour to do more podcasts throughout the course of the WPL, and we will hopefully speak to you soon. Meanwhile, go and feed that child.
I will. Might get some shut eye as well. Thanks, Agus.